If I can, by way of introduction, my name is David Ellis. I'm a research scientist with the Texas Transportation Institute. TTI, as you know, is a part of the Texas A&M University system. I was asked to appear today to talk about a project that we've been working on in conjunction with the Texas Department of Transportation and MPOs across the state, trying to come up with a method to allow not only transportation policymakers and analysts, but the general public as well, to look at transportation trends in Texas, to be able to look at alternative analysis with respect to alternative tax rates, different types of taxes, different types of roadway performance, different types of levels of investment in our transportation infrastructure. And we are well along in that project, and I wanted to give you a little bit of background information on how this model works. It's called the TRENDS model, which stands for the Transportation Revenue Expenditure and Needs Determination System model. And we call it TRENDS. And basically, this model has some key variables in it, and I want to explain to you how the model works and what the model does, and then also give you the website, the web address, where you and anybody else, for that matter, can go online and begin to use this model. Before I get into it, I should also add that we have been working on this model for some time. We are in the process of wrapping up what I would term as phase one, in the sense that at the end of June, we will have everything we're going to do in this first phase done, and then following that, we will begin to make some improvements to the model that we've already identified. So while it is a fully functioning, fully working model online right now, I wouldn't call this first phase done until the end of June, when we've had our final review and all of the folks who have been involved in critiquing its development have more or less signed off on it. So I wanted to say that at the outset. But it functions off a series of key important variables to transportation, the first being population, the second being fuel efficiency, and not just fuel efficiency for personal vehicles, but commercial vehicles as well. It is keyed off of this relationship between population and fuel consumption for both gasoline and diesel fuel, and then also vehicle registration fee revenue and the relationship between that revenue stream and population. And there are some very strong relationships that exist. The most important thing you have to figure out is what you think the population is going to do in the future. And this model, pardon me, allows you, the user, to choose among these different alternative revenue scenarios. You're not stuck to any one particular scenario. These are produced by the Texas State Data Center. And in terms of looking at future outcomes for revenue streams and expenditure streams and transportation needs, you can choose whatever population scenario you want. You can also choose different levels of fuel efficiency for personal vehicles. You see three fuel efficiency curves here. These were developed by Cambridge Systematics, a nationwide consulting firm out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then we at TTI adopted these fuel efficiency curves to fit the Texas vehicle fleet. We, as you might imagine, have a higher percentage of trucks and SUVs, as does the country as a whole, so we have to adjust that vehicle fleet profile to fit Texas. But the steep incline you see in the curve starting there about 2024, 25, and so on and so forth, that has to deal with the assumptions that Cambridge Systematics used in consulting experts across the country relative to the market penetration of hybrid vehicles and alternative fuel vehicles. But the nice thing about this model and the way it's designed is that you are not locked into any one particular fuel efficiency scenario. You can choose whichever one of these you think is likely to be the case in the future. The same thing is the case with respect to commercial vehicles. Again, three different alternatives that you can choose from for fuel efficiency for commercial vehicles. And in Texas, just parenthetically, about 97% of our gasoline goes into personal vehicles, and about 97.3% of our diesel fuel goes into commercial vehicles.
Can you say that again, please?
Yes, ma'am. In Texas, about 97% of our gasoline goes into personal vehicles, about 97.3% 93, 97.4% of our diesel goes into commercial vehicles.
Now, which one of these models would more closely approximate the new administration's recommendations for diesel fuel efficiency?
Well, the high scenario would come the closest, but that's even low for their fuel efficiency CAFE standards. But one of the things, Mr. Chairman, it's important to keep in mind is you got CAFE standards on the one hand, which is what we often talk about when we talk about future fuel efficiencies. And you've got this set of numbers, and they're two different things. This is the projected fuel efficiency of the vehicle fleet that is on the roadway at any given time, as opposed to the CAFE standards, which represent the standards that are supposed to be met by new vehicles in that year. So you've got a mix of old and new vehicles on the road at any given time. And it's also important to point out parenthetically that we have never met CAFE standards ever. So whether we will in the future, who knows. This is, I want to show you just this very briefly. I don't want to get you buried in the math here, but this is one of the relationships that's important, and that is understanding this relationship between population and the amount of gasoline sold. You can see a very strong relationship there, pardon me, between how many people there are in the state of Texas and how many gallons of gasoline are sold, which makes sense. More vehicles, more people, more vehicles, more miles driven, etc. Same thing holds true for diesel. Interesting to note, the very last dot out there on the far right, you see how far below the trend line that is. That is 2009, which is a function of the recession of 2008, 2009. Diesel fuel is very sensitive to overall economic conditions and economic performance, and as the economy, retail sales slow, so does diesel fuel consumption. The nice thing about this model, however, is we will continue to update this line with every new data point, every new year, and so the line gets adjusted. But the bottom, what's important about this is that if you can project population, which we do from the state data center, then you can also project the amount of fuel that's likely to be consumed, and you can do that based on the statistical reliability of this relationship fairly accurately. Same thing is the case for vehicle registration fees when you look at the relationship between population and vehicle registration fee revenue. Again, that makes sense. More people, more cars. And so we can pardon me, develop a pretty strong relationship there. There are a number of other variables in the model that, again, all of these, the user controls, you can look at. You can control the consumer price index, the highway cost index, inflation rates, and a number of different TxDOT internal costs, whether it's engineering, contributions to the retirement fund, so on and so forth. You can use different pavement condition scores, in other words, quality of pavement you want. You can eliminate some or all of the, quote, diversions, unquote, and see what the impact of that is. You can issue bonds. You can set state and federal fuel tax rates, you can set vehicle registration fee rates, you can even impose a VMT fee if you want to. You can index the fuel tax to either the CPI or the highway cost index, and you can change transportation public education allocation. As the user of this model, again, you can control all these variables, and you can sit there and do alternative analyses to see what the impact might be.
Can you
yes, ma'am.
Check what the cost is to the public for decreased fuel efficiency from being in all traffic?
That is not at this time, but that is precisely one of the things that we're going to add in the next phase. At the outset, I said we're going to finish this first phase by the end of June. That's one of the first items on the agenda for the next phase of the model, that along with the economic impact associated with transportation improvements.
And what's the timing for the next phase?
The next phase, I am hopeful that we can have that, based on the preparatory work we've already done, I'm hopeful that we can have that second phase finished by the middle of September, sometime this fall, early fall. That's what I'm thinking that we'll be able to do. We've already done a pretty good amount of work in that area. It's just a matter now of rolling it into the model. So I think we'll be able to speed along that fairly well. So basically, real quickly, how the model works, it's really pretty simple, to be honest about it. You use this relationship between the amount of gallons that are consumed and the population. You've got a projection of the future population, so you can then project how many gallons of fuel are likely to be consumed. Then what we have to do, we can take the historical, once you have a projected or this relationship between population and the number of gallons consumed, then if you want to divide that by the fuel or multiply that by the fuel efficiency, you can get the estimated miles driven, which then you can then use later on to project a VMT revenue if you want to have a VMT tax. But when you establish this relationship between population and the number of gallons consumed of fuel, that incorporates the past fuel efficiency. You've got this new fuel efficiency you want to deal with in the future, so you project gallons consumed in the future, adjust it by the new fuel efficiency, because it's not going to be the old fuel efficiency, it's going to be this new fuel efficiency. So the model does all of that. And so ultimately you get this new fuel efficiency adjusted amount of gallons consumed multiplied by a tax rate, and then you can project revenues. Do the same thing for commercial gallons and commercial VMT, and you're able to put together a reduction of revenue from the fuel tax. We did all this, then we go back and we test it to say, okay, let's look at the past. Let's use this model and then for a year in the past and see how close we came. How well does the model perform? Well, for gasoline, the absolute mean value of error, meaning the average error in any given year from the year 1995 through the year 2005, was less than 4%. Projected gasoline. For diesel fuel, it was less than 4.5%. Now, I'm going to be honest and tell you, in 2009, it overprojected diesel fuel by a much higher amount than that, a little over 10%. Again, that was a function of the recession that we went into in 2009, and I think I, along with everybody else, is hopeful that that's an anomaly. But we will go back to adjust that equation and see if we can get the model to perform a little bit better. So the bottom line is that it does a fairly good job in terms of looking at the past and seeing how well the model has projected revenues relative to the revenues, the historical revenues that we actually know about. The model then does all of those calculations for all population scenarios, all fuel efficiency scenarios, for the federal gasoline taxes, state and federal diesel fuel taxes, all of those things, does all those calculations simultaneously, and then presents to you the results that you want, the results that you choose. It also does the calculations with respect to vehicle registration fee revenues, and because we've projected future gallons of gasoline consumed and we've projected future fuel efficiency, then we can project future vehicle miles traveled. And then if you want to assess a VMT tax at some point in the future, it can then calculate for you how much revenue will be raised. We also do all of the expenses. We try to incorporate, and I think have successfully incorporated, essentially every single dollar that TxDOT spends, whether it's on engineering, whether it's on maintenance, contributions to their retirement fund, design, ferry operations, you name it. And we use their actual expenses for the first 10 years. They have been very, very helpful, TxDOT has, in working with us and developing this model. They provide us with monthly updates of their cash flow forecast. We roll those cash flow forecasts into this model so that we're using their actual numbers on expenses. And this is kind of what the model looks like online. When you call it up on the website, you get a set of instructions, and at the very end, you get my email address so that if you run into problems, you can email us and we'll be happy to address it, whatever question you may have. And it's built along a pull-down menu. The very first question it asks you is, it says, how much money would you like to invest in transportation capacity? And then it asks you about, and if you change that answer from no to yes, another menu pops down and asks you how much you want to invest, when you want to start those investments, and when you want to have them completed. And I'll show you in just a second what that looks like. But also, paying spaces there for you to enter state and gasoline, state and gasoline and diesel tax revenues, as well as federal gasoline and diesel tax revenues. So if you want to feel like you can be the gasoline tax fairy at the federal level as well, certainly the model gives you that power. But under that new capacity question, if you change the answer to yes, as I mentioned, another menu pops down. It asks you how much additional capacity you want, when you want to start those improvements, when you want to be finished, and it will apportion those expenditures out over that period of time. With the gasoline tax, if you change the answer to yes, they ask you how much you want to increase the gasoline tax, when you want that tax increase to become effective, and if you're a real glutton for punishment, it will give you the opportunity to increase it again at some later date and see what the effect of that is. So if you wanted to do a nickel increase now and another nickel increase in 5 years and look at the impact of that, it will allow you to do it. Of course, it allows you to do the same thing with respect to the state diesel fuel tax.
Does the model take into consideration the concept of indexing?
Yes, sir, it does. As a matter of fact, if you'll see down there that third maroon bar, and the fact that these are maroon bars and we developed this at Texas A&M is pure coincidence, but you'll see let me switch down. The indexing of the motor fuels tax, it gives you the option of indexing it to the highway cost index or to the consumer price index. One of the improvements that we're making in June that's not on here but will be on by the end of June is the option to index it to fuel efficiency. So as fuel efficiency increases, you can increase the gasoline tax, and basically you sort of cease the deterioration or the loss of fuel tax revenue due to increased fuel efficiency. So it will give you that option then to index it to one any of these three options. And the other new improvement that's coming online, you'll see it asks you if you want to index, when do you want that index to start? That option will still be there, and the model will allow you then to index to either the highway cost index and fuel efficiency, or to the consumer price index and fuel efficiency, to just one of them separately. So you'll have multiple options there. Then you can go down, and the amount that you increase the gasoline tax, historically there's been the 75-25 split between public ed and transportation. This allows you to take that percentage and set it at a different rate for that amount of the increase. So if you increase it a nickel, it's not going to change the dedication of the 20 cents that's already in place. It only changes the dedication of the incremental amount. You see it's 74% now as opposed to 75. That's to take into account the amount that the comptroller retains and refunds, et cetera, that is the effect of the gross tax. It also allows you now to increase vehicle registration fees underneath that, and then you see the ability to increase the VMT fees. You can do those things, vehicle registration fees. This will change in our new model. You'll be able to do it by vehicle class, cars under 6,000 pounds, over 6,000, trucks under and over certain weight limit, and you'll be able to distinguish between commercial and personal vehicles. And that will be a little bit different in this new model. The second thing in the middle there, you see the state VMT tax variables. And those particular models, that particular component of the model, you're asked if you want to impose a VMT tax. And if you say yes, it asks you how much, and you're able to discriminate between personal and commercial vehicles in this particular thing. And it allows you to end the state gasoline tax in case you want to impose a VMT tax in lieu of the gasoline tax. The next section has to do with fuel efficiency variables. and which one of those curves you want to select, the average, the low, the high, and then the population growth scenarios, any one of those four growth curves. Last but not least, we have developed a new component for this model that deals with local options, and that is the model allows you to see the impact, presuming for a moment that, say, the Houston-Galveston Area Council or the North Texas COG or any NPO in the state, because it includes all NPOs, if they have the authority to levy a local gasoline tax, how much would that raise for that local area? And we do the same thing with respect to a VMP fee and a vehicle registration fee. And so if you change that local option lever there from no to yes, what will pop down is a list of all the NPOs in the state, and you check the ones upon which you want to do analysis, you enter the rate, and then it will provide you with the data. Again, on a hypothetical basis only. It allows you to see the impact of that. And then finally, you get outputs or options with respect to outputs. You can get a list of all the variables you've chosen. You can get summaries of revenues and expenses by year. You can get what is essentially a financial statement. It looks like a financial statement with all the revenues and all the expenses for each year. And you hit the submit button, and it spits out reports, and it will spit out graphs like this that show you what the cumulative balance of funds is, or individual years showing revenues, maintenance and operating expenditures, so on and so forth. And then again, there's a sheet that looks very much like a P&L statement, if you would. And this is the web address: trends-tti.tamu.edu, and it's not password protected. Anybody in the world can use it anytime, anywhere. We tried to make this as transparent as possible, tried to make it as user friendly as possible, and we continue to try to do that to make it better. And again, and the last comment would be is that this is still very much a work in progress. It's a fully functioning model right now, but we will continue to make improvements this month, get this first phase finished, and then begin to do some of these other things that I've talked about the remainder of the summer and the early fall. And I'm sorry for going way over my time. I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
That's all right. Members, any questions? Does your model take into consideration, for example, propane-powered trucks that we now have a registration fee based upon Cal, in which the driver asserts how many miles they're driving in a certain period of time in a year, and it's a variable based on the miles driven? Does it have the ability to plug something in for that type of powered vehicle, or alternatively for electricity? You know, we have been advised that at least Nissan and some others project that there's going to be a substantial amount of vehicles on our roads using all electricity, and obviously not fossil fuel burning, and therefore there would be no gasoline pack derived from those vehicles. But how do we register those vehicles? How do we certify as to how many miles they've driven, and how do we account for that revenue stream or lost revenue stream on the gasoline tax, and then account for it on the registration side? Does your model take into consideration any of those variables?
No, sir, not on the revenue side. Well, with respect to electric vehicles, for example, it does take into consideration the loss of revenue in terms of fuel tax revenue, because it does take into consideration these various alternative assumptions relative to market penetration of electric and other hybrid and alternative fuel vehicles. But it does take it into account in that phase. But not on the revenue side, in terms of Are we going to tax electricity, for example, or something, some way to capture that road use? The only other method that the model incorporates at the present time is a tax on travel, VMT, but not on any use of electricity for travel, specifically electricity as a commodity. Okay. It doesn't capture any of that, but that's something that you raise a very, very good point, that as that becomes more and more of the market, that's something that we're going to have to, that we need to incorporate, but we have not done that up to this point. But we can give that some
we're going to hear some testimony later today about electric vehicles and VMTs associated with that. So I just was wondering if your model, could it be tailored to provide some data in that regard?
I think it could. It's just something we've not done yet, and just in the general scheme of things.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ginger Gooden, and I'm a senior research engineer with the Texas Transportation Institute. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share some of the knowledge that we've gained through our research on the topic of vehicle miles traveled, or VMT fees, which I will also refer to as vehicle mileage fees. I will begin my testimony with background material to illustrate concerns over the long-term sustainability of the fuel tax as a funding source for the state transportation system. And then I'll provide an overview of a road use fee based on miles traveled, which is one option that's being discussed in the U.S. and abroad. You've already received this primer on vehicle mileage fees that we developed for the Texas Department of Transportation to answer some of the basic questions about this topic. Over the next few minutes, I'll highlight some of the information in this document, as well as offer some new information for consideration. I want to begin by talking about the future of the fuel tax, and we've also already touched on some of that with Dr. Ellis's testimony. It begins with the fact that various market pressures and governmental regulations are leading to a reduction in fossil fuel consumption. These forces are driving up vehicle fuel efficiency, and that means that the average driver will pay less tax in the future to use the state for transportation system, given that the fuel tax, of course, is assessed on each gallon of fuel purchased. I want to give you just a few examples of how much the average Texan pays and how that's expected to change over time. Excuse me. The average amount that a Texas passenger car driver pays in state fuel taxes is $9.50 per month, and that's based on Texas average fuel efficiency of 21 miles per gallon and 12,000 miles per year driven. That's the state fuel tax only. If you count the federal fuel tax, the average driver pays about $18.30 per month in total fuel taxes. But I'm going to refer from this point forward to the state fuel tax specifically. Now, it's important to note that when the distance is equal, the amount that an individual driver pays depends on the fuel efficiency of their vehicle. So, for example, we start at 12,000 miles per year. The driver of the Nissan Altima that gets 25 miles per gallon will pay $8 in state fuel taxes per month. A driver of a Chevy Silverado getting 15 miles per gallon, driving that same 12,000 miles per year, will pay about $13.33 in state fuel taxes per month. So that's 67% more, again, based solely on fuel efficiency, and that's just an illustration. If you look at page 2 of the testimony that was handed out, there are a couple of graphs there. And what you'll see in figure 1 is first the projected increase in average fuel efficiency. And this is what Dr. Ellis showed you from the trends model. So that's just that curve that shows, using the average curve value for fuel taxes for fuel efficiency over time. What the second figure shows below that is the estimated state fuel tax collected per driver.
Where are you reading from?
I'm sorry. I apologize. There's a handout here.
I'm sorry. We were all referring to the
okay.
color. brochure that you gave us before.
And you're going to page two going, I don't see any.
Most of us were. I think he was on top.
Okay, it's this page. There's two graphs on page two. Okay, and the top one is the fuel efficiency graph from the trends model. But what you see in the second one below is a graph that shows estimated state fuel tax collected per driver through 2035. But you see on the blue line at the top is just that miles traveled will stay the same or just slightly increase over time. But because of fuel efficiency, that's increasing. The amount that's paid per person over time is going to drop significantly in the next 25 years. So we're going from 21 miles per gallon now in 2010 to, if we're looking at 2020 per se, 28 miles per gallon. And so that's 22% drop in the amount that an individual pays for fuel tax over that time. In this testimony that you have in front of you, I've cited four national reports that raise the same concerns over the long-term sustainability of the federal fuel tax. And all of these studies point to a use-based fee system as a promising alternative to the fuel tax, and they recommend that approach be further evaluated. In Texas, the Legislative Budget Board issued a study last year that described VMT fees as an alternative to the fuel tax to address long-term sustainability issues. And that report recommends that a feasibility study be supported that looks at public acceptance, business impacts, and possible collection methods. So the fuel tax has been a pretty good proxy for road use inception, but over time there's really two concerns that are surfacing that are exposing flaws in the long-term stability of the fuel tax as a revenue source. The first concern is that revenue per mile driven will decline as vehicles become more fuel efficient. And the second is the emergence of disparities in the proportion of tax paid to use the system according to vehicle fuel efficiency, including that vehicles use alternative fuels to electricity. Those will fall completely outside of the current fuel tax collection system. So now let me speak for a moment about usage-based systems, and more specifically a fee system that charges drivers by the number of miles driven. The mileage approach does is it eliminates fuel consumption, type of fuel efficiency, and the transportation revenue equation. Now, the primary argument that we're seeing around the country for per-mile usage fees is this revenue sustainability issue. But there are also some who point to opportunities to apply congestion pricing, to allocate resources based on use, and all that depends on how the fee collection system is designed. Now, the demonstrations and the field applications of vehicle mileage fees have been limited. And page 11 of this document, there are several case studies of these pilot projects that have been conducted, as well as a description of the only implementation in the world, which is in Germany on large commercial vehicles. The state of Oregon, the first demonstration in 2006 with 299 volunteer drivers. Using onboard units that connect to the odometer, the mileage was recorded on that onboard unit and then reconciled with fuel purchases at the fuel station. So at refueling, the total miles driven were downloaded from the vehicle onboard unit to the fuel pump using wireless technology, and a fee of 1.2 cents per mile was then added to the gas bill and the state fuel tax deducted. A GPS feature was incorporated in the unit to detect when a vehicle left the state. Then in Portland, if they crossed the bridge over into Washington, it would stop counting. And as soon as they returned, it would begin counting again. Only the total miles driven in the state were downloaded to the fuel pump. There was not any data about the location of the vehicle that was transmitted outside of the vehicle. Now, the University of Iowa is recently conducting a two-year national evaluation of the mileage fee concept. The study was conducted so far in six U.S. locations, and one of those included Austin, Texas. And there are plans to conduct additional evaluations in more locations nationwide. In their demonstration, the Iowa researchers utilized an onboard unit similar to Oregon, but what they did is utilize cellular technology transmit the mileage data out of the vehicle to a central location and then generated a bill that was sent to the driver.
Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
talking about, you know, raising revenues being reduced. And currently, here's our system is the way I understand it. I pull up to a gas pump, I put in on my credit card or cash, and I'm charged the amount of the gasoline, the taxes included in there. So I just do it every few days or weekly. Once a year, I pay my registration fee. So the most that is $58.80, and then a $10 local charge. If I drive on a toll road, I either throw the coins in or have the tag. And so it's a real soft way that we collect in with.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few issues about the way we collect tolls and the way we build toll roads. Besides building the roads, I've asked, and I'm going to try to figure out what it costs us to actually maintain those and how much money goes into operating toll roads administratively versus putting it back into roads.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicle miles traveled, and I know you cover this and you're going through, and I apologize for jumping short about the Big Brother issue, the technology issue, and I think we're going to create a system where a lot of people are going to make a lot of money, and none of it's going to go into operating roads. We're going to have units in our car, we're going to have entities that monitor this stuff, and before we get too far in that, not in Texas, but the rest of the nation, why? If we can pretty much estimate, and if we were to ever go to vehicle miles traveled, why wouldn't we come up with some system that is so simple that we bill people and quit creating all these other businesses that make millions of dollars? You probably thought about that. If we have an annual registration, if there's a way to bill people monthly, if we're already now estimating, and I believe you guys probably feel pretty good about your numbers, you probably guess as to what all of us are traveling in a year's time. Are there some simpler methods that gets down to it? Because, again, I think the public's going to have a hard time getting an annual bill or not being able to pay as they go. And you're going to get into this, too, but I'll ask
right.
it now also. On the public charge stations for electric cars, is there a charge for that? If someone pulls up, because you can charge them at home, so it's on your electric bill, your electricity bill goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a way we could probably find that out. But is there a charge for these places? Or are we doing it just because we want to encourage the non-use of fossil fuel? Because if we are charging to charge up your car, you know, we should be able to put a fee on that as well. So even though all these systems are available, I would rather not have one. And yeah. Would there be a recommendation of how you bill? If you don't want a system in your mm-hmm. car, and you arbitrarily, somebody decide at 15,000 miles a year, I mean, leasing companies have the information. I go to get my car inspected once a year, had inspected last year. There's a difference in the mileage of last year to this year. Why do I need something in my car once a year? I can tell you what it is.
Well, the technology is something that the discussion tends to gravitate to. And you're absolutely right. A low-tech solution of an odometer reading, an annual inspection, is certainly a low-tech option, an easy option, maybe a no-tech option that should be considered as well if you're looking at a kind of a range of approaches. Now, the downsides to that, we are doing some research right now, but I'll just tell you what we hear from people on the downside for that. They don't want to pay a lump sum once a year. So there's a way you can spread that that payment out over the year.
Only annual fee most people see is that registration.
Correct.
And they don't even know what it is.
Correct.
Once a year they write a check, but they really can't remember even a month
right.
after that what that fee is.
Right.
So
the other downside is that it counts mileage outside of the state. It counts mileage on private property. We've heard that issue raised as well. So you have to understand.
But we have exemptions now for even the fossil fuels. If you have a farm truck, if you have a red tie diesel, so we have those in place. And you would I assume do the same things. You would apply for a certain
refund
exemption in that case. And some of your members also want to clarify before we go any further, because I think this is what's going to help the argument a lot. The very first page where you say it's an average of $9.50 a month, is that the 75-25 of the 20 cents, or is that the entire 20 cents?
That's the entire 20 cents.
And how about the 18.4 from the federal government? And the reason I want to get that number is, even though, for instance, a nickel goes to public education, the public does need to know what they're paying now totally. So I'm glad to hear that the $9.50 a month is the 20 cents a gallon.
That's the 20 cents.
So then if we figure in the 18.4, we probably add up not quite double, but... so we can figure out more or less what they're paying, because $114 a year or in gas tax is pretty cheap. You add $58 and make another $10 for the county. We're up around $70, $114, $70. It's $184 a year is what the average person pays for transportation infrastructure. Pretty darn good bargain. So I think we need to probably focus in on that, try to figure out how to keep it at least level or increase it, because I also know in your information you're going to show us where it's starting to taper off. And I don't know if Michael Morris got some information from you guys. It sounds like it. He had run the scenario where in a few years from now people are going to be paying half of what they're paying now as far as gas taxes because of the increased efficiencies. And as long as people don't realize that, they're still going to be clamoring for wanting more infrastructure, but they have reduced in half what they're paying. This is the only thing that we do as a government body that we can actually honestly say we're going to reduce your taxes. Because when we did that for public education, we didn't reduce their taxes. But I can have a press conference this afternoon and claim that I would reduce the amount of money they're paying towards transportation infrastructure by 50% over the next 5 years. I could probably get away with that. Correct? Okay, does anybody want to join me this afternoon? I'm going to reduce everybody's gas tax by 10% over the next 5 years.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll be discussing in these meetings. So,
if we can, again, and I know there's all the high tech, but for me to sell it again in my community where it's very difficult, even $184 doesn't sound like a lot, it's going to be pretty tough to send out a $184 bill once a year. So once we get all down to how it might work, we've got to probably come up with a way to bill people for that regarding their automobiles. And the high tech I'd like to see on the other end. I mean, at the pump, at the instead of putting a unit in my car, and I'm going to disable it anyway. I take the battery out of my phone when I leave here so that the black helicopters can't follow me.
Representative
Hunter? Yeah. And how does this affect Corpus Christi is what my next
absolutely right. Now, who is proposing vehicle mileage fee? I want to know what groups in the state of Texas want me to go home and say, hook up a machine and we're going to watch every mile you drive and we're going to charge you. So who's proposing?
I don't know that anybody is proposing that. This. Right. I'm not.
This is a concept.
It is a concept, correct. And it is, again, it's been identified as a promising approach by several national commissions.
Okay.
And there are several states that are doing it.
Who is telling us that it's promising?
Two national commissions.
Well, who?
The National Financing Commission and the National Revenue Commission. I have them cited at the bottom of, I think, page 3.
And you're citing Oregon, Iowa. Correct?
There's Transportation Research Board.
Well, no, you're giving us two examples, University of Iowa and the state of Oregon.
Those are where they've been tested.
Here's my view. One, I'm a hybrid driver. How about that? A Republican who's a and I've been one since 2004. Doesn't vehicle mileage fee discourage the use of hybrids in energy efficiency? Why go buy a car to get more mileage
but I'm still going to get hit with the mileage fee.
And we hear that concern raised quite a bit in the
correct.
Past. That is correct. But most people buy fuel-efficient vehicles for the savings on fuel, which is a much higher percentage of the operating cost.
But it can discourage the use of fuel-efficient vehicles because it doesn't help on reducing mileage. It just does miles per gallon, correct? In other words, you're still taxing us if you get this proposal or whoever puts it in on the amount of miles we drive, even though we're trying to be environmentally conscious.
Correct.
All right. Now, here's my next question. I live in South Texas, as Representative Pickett says. How is vehicle mileage fees not discriminatory in different regions of the state? It is discriminatory because some of us are not near certain areas where we have to drive within a 3 to 4 hour basis. I'm also in a hurricane zone, and then we have to look at mileage because of that. So how is vehicle mileage fee not discriminatory for regions of Texas? Because you got to look at Texas differently than Oregon and Iowa.
Okay.
You brought this topic up.
Yes, I did. Most of those states have rural areas as well, and this is a concern that comes up repeatedly.
Hurricanes in Iowa and Oregon.
I understand.
And I think isn't Texas a little bigger?
A little bit, yes.
All right. Have you ever been to South Texas?
I have, yes.
All right. Now, there's a lot of mileage that has to be driven. So isn't it discriminatory to areas that have a lot of area they have to cover?
You're paying right now a user fee on your fuel tax. So the more that you drive, the more fuel you consume, the more that you're paying now.
But if you stick one of these machines in the cars, it can actually harm certain areas of the state or cost other areas of the state more than others.
I can understand that perception.
Especially when we're not as accessible to other areas of the state, correct?
Yes, and one other approach you could do is you could set your rate structure where you get a lower rate per mile for rural roads as opposed to urban roads.
All right. What I'd like you to do is keep me posted on this topic, and I'd like to know who in Texas is proposing. Once you learn, that's who I want to know so I can keep in contact with you.
I would say it's whoever has a machine to sell.
I agree.
And that really is something that I think we ought to be careful of, because at the end of the day, who benefits? And it's whoever sells the machines, monitors the machines, manufactures them, repairs them, licenses them. And I think it's like mentioned about the low tech. I think we've had the same argument with red light cameras. The time it was brought up and the fees were reduced, the issue went away for a while because of the revenue produced and the people that sell those machines. But I would like to take the scenario so that we get all sides of the argument. We encourage people to be greener. I'm looking for a sponsor. I'm going to say it again publicly. I'm trying to an English double-decker bus on the road as a green vehicle, so bring some attention to it. If everybody in this room, though, were to drive a green vehicle and were battery-operated within a month, we lose the $184 from everybody in this room. So when we're all driving green vehicles and there is no gas tax, ultimately, we're going to have to switch it to something at that point. So it's the delicate balancing act, as you brought up. I mean, you're driving a Prius. You didn't say what you were driving. You said
I try not to give the brand.
Okay. You're driving a hybrid because you feel it's important to do. And so the government and most people want to reward you for that. And maybe we should reward you for that by giving you a deeper discount at Handles and HEB versus the road tax. I don't know what it is. And I think everybody is probably struggling, first off, of how much it's actually costing us, what we're spending, and how to be fair across the board for all the different types of vehicles. This is going to be expanded also into public transit. Your gas dollars, gas tax dollars, are supporting a public transit system where people use, and they're not paying a gas tax, but we're supporting that system, gas tax. And we want to encourage more people to get into buses, the same thing. More people drive buses and are leaving their cars at home, there's additional gas tax that we're not collecting. So I don't know, you know, the chicken or the egg, which comes first, but...
Well, Ginger, I, you know, in Ginger's defense, don't shoot the messenger. The chair being tasked with, or this committee being tasked with the responsibility to look at funding alternatives, as we all recognize that fossil fuel consumption continues to go down. There's still more cars going on our roadways. We're going to have to find a stable source of revenue. And so you've heard some of the concerns that we have about privacy and certainly rural members, including myself, have problems associated with driving on pastures, roads, or certainly private back roads being taxed at that level when they're not right now. That's all a concern, and technology and privacy and Big Brother is always a concern. But as we work through these issues, we want to try to address those concerns. But there'll be a very spirited debate on how we implement a vehicle miles driven, or if we implement any sort of revenue source based on the miles driven. So we wanted to at least get this testimony before the committee, and Ginger, thank you for that. What kind of pushback has Oregon experienced with this type of revenue collection?
They have not moved forward with any implementation at this point. The pilot they considered a success because it demonstrated the technology, and they did have high public acceptance from those who participated. The state of Minnesota is now conducting a pilot project, and the state of Nevada is also moving forward. I just wanted to close by saying that we are currently conducting a study for TxDOT, in which we're gathering a lot of public acceptance data. And the things that you have brought up are the things that we're hearing in our focus groups and our interviews that we're conducting. The study is to be completed by the end of the summer. We hope to have a policy framework that is built upon public acceptance to see if there's any interest in moving forward and how you might move forward based on what we're hearing back from the public.
Do you have any ideas with regard to Chairman Pickett's concerns about an annual inspection, perhaps, which shows how many miles driven, lump sum being collected at that time? Or is there any, have you thought about any alternative methodology of collecting more on a monthly basis this fee as opposed to a lump sum at inspection time?
Well, I mean, we've conducted 3 of 5 focus groups right now, and we lay out a low-tech to a high-tech technology option. So the odometer reading is the low-tech option, a GPS is a high-tech, and a kind of medium range is a cellular-based system. But we think far, and we still have 2 focus groups, one in Corpus and one in Abilene, to do yet.
Corpus would be good.
Corpus is good. That was a good choice, wasn't it?
Corpus. Okay. I'll be waiting.
So far, we've done Dallas, Laredo, and Yoakum. And we do see some differences between rural and urban. But we do hear consistencies that if we ask people, if this is done, which of these 3 technology, they like the low-tech, my odometer reading approach. It's much more simple. They don't like the idea of paying on a lump sum. Is there a way to spread that cost out? And generally, people don't like the idea, but they understand why this is being looked at as a long-term approach for the fuel tax, and they recognize the issues associated with the fuel tax.
Typically, state inspections are performed by your local garage down the street, and they are not an authorized tax collector, I don't think, on behalf of the state. How would you do it?
how would you collect that tax if not through the inspection?
I think what the inspection does is verify your odometer reading, and then somehow that odometer reading would be the official reading, and then mileage deducted from that, and then tax collection could happen through, you know, typical methods, I guess, through registration process, for example. But then people don't like the idea of when you say it's $184 a year, it's like, well, I don't want to pay that in one shot.
Okay. But do you have any suggestions on how that would be?
Not at this point, but I think in our what we're looking toward in our final report that we're going to submit to TxDOT by the end of August is this policy framework. We're going to suggest for you and for TxDOT some different approaches you might want to consider to pilot test. And based on what we're hearing so far, I would assume that the odometer reading approach with how the administration would work on that would be one of the things that we would lay out as an option.
You know, I would submit that low technology, low cost would have more traction in all of those scenarios, if at all. I mean, there's some that are going to be opposed, but we're simply trying to provide for alternatives on how we stabilize our revenue stream to provide for transportation infrastructure funding. And so this is obviously an option that takes care of alternative fueled vehicles, electricity, propane, that sort of thing, or hybrid vehicles. So anything else, members?
Okay. Let me go back to the it's going to be a while before literally any of this stuff would happen. We're still, I don't think the public just believes it quite yet. And since you do research, would there be a way for you to put any kind of a dollar figure on the concern I have of what type of industry and how much would that industry would make if we went to the unit in the car? I mean, because I know there's prices out there for that now. I know they do it. I know costs should come down and all that, but I think it would help, and I think it would be fair. We could see, really, if we just went to that vehicle miles travel system, what additional industry we create. It still bothers me because I'm still trying to get my hands around, like I said, the whole toll process. It costs us more to build toll roads. It costs us more to maintain toll roads, and that money isn't going back into infrastructure. And if there is a way that in the low tech, I think we have obviously ways to do it, and some folks might not be opposed to paying the $184. I mean, I know you've done some research, and so has TxDOT on registration fees, and we fall in the middle. You know, our registration fees are, for the most part, pretty low. There are states that charge $300 and $400 as an annual fee, period, right off the bat. And I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but if we had an annual registration fee that was around that, we wouldn't have to worry about gas tax. It would be kind of a dying thing that we just look as a windfall instead of what we're living off of. But, and the vehicle miles travel, I feel the same way that you do about that. I mean, if I just decide not to drive very much, and I'm trying to do that right now, I'm just trying to drive less. And then if you pay it annually, and then there's the collection whole thing, and even if you did it monthly, would you attach? They don't pay the fee, and then there's a whole other entity there. Then we've had attorneys and lawyers who get involved.
Hey, you're going to be preaching now.
Yeah.
Well, there's another aspect which I'd like you to look at. If you're, you know, we try to promote in-state tourism and travel. And so I don't want to see somebody come up with one of these concepts that discourages the economy and the economics that travel and tourism bring to the state by cutting it off. In other words, I'm concerned about the discriminatory cost when you do it by miles, because then you're discouraging Texans to travel in Texas if they can go quickly across another state border to cut down on mileage. And then you impact this on the other set of money. And so please take that into account when you do these focus groups, because a mileage cost could actually cause us to lose money in the long run.
Okay.
Members, anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Ellison.